Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Good day. I am Carrie Weber, and you are listening to America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture.
And I'm Kevin Clark. Let me check my license. Yes, I am indefinitely Kevin Clark, sitting in for Father Matt Malone this afternoon. Each week, we offer news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world, gathered by the crack team at America Magazine.
Indeed. And this week, we have one additional member of that team here with us. We have Jim Keen, one
Hi,
of our Curry. Senior editors.
Hi, Kevin.
Jim.
We are glad that you are here with us, Jim.
Thank you.
One person in our church who has tried to really bridge a lot of different divides is Thomas Merton. He's a Trappist monk. He's famous for his spiritual autobiography, The Seven Story Mountain, various other spiritual books, New Seeds of Contemplation,
Notes from a Guilty Bystander.
The Autobiography of Kevin Clark. No, not mine.
I don't think you can lay claim to his work just yet. And he, through his writing, has a lot to offer us about how to have conversations with people across different religious backgrounds, different political backgrounds, and what we might be able to learn today. And here to talk with us about that is Andrew Lenore. He is a writer and a historian. He's based in New York, and he's a former speechwriter. He's been published in a number of wonderful places, and he grew up Quaker, so he has a different background that testifies to the appeal of Thomas Merton as somebody who really valued interreligious and ecumenical dialogue, and so it is evident in the fact that people of various different faith backgrounds still are interested in him and still have a lot to take away from him. So, Andrew Lenore, welcome to the show.
Hey, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're really glad to have you. Maybe we could just start, for our listeners who are not too familiar with Thomas Merton, with a quick little introduction to him, if you would be so kind.
Sure thing. Well, Thomas Merton was born in France in 1915 to Protestant parents. His mother was Quaker, which I always find kind of amusing. And he came to the United States in early childhood, sort of fleeing World War I. And his life is really just sort of a testament to, as you were saying, social activism and interfaith dialogue, wherein he joined the monastery of Gethsemane in Louisville, Kentucky, 3 weeks after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. After having attended Columbia University and having pursued a career as a writer, he then spent the remaining 27 years of his life writing about 60 different works on contemplation, the Catholic faith, and religion, increasingly moving over time into interfaith dialogue and social activism, including support for the civil rights movement.
So it's easy to see. You know, he was came from a Quaker background like yourself. Is that how you first became interested in Merton and through Merton the church?
Well, to be honest, I was actually exposed to Merton through his interfaith dialogues with specifically Buddhist instructors. In 1968, when he died in Thailand, he was actually there as part of an interfaith colloquium amongst monastics of the Hindu and Buddhist backgrounds. His work, Mystics and Zen Masters, which I funnily enough picked up at a church fair, was my first connection to Merton, and from there the fascination just kept growing.
And so can you talk to us a little bit about what made you think of him as a person to look to in an age with so much division?
Well, what actually sort of happened here was it was over Christmas time, shortly after the election, and I was reading Seeds of Destruction, which is Merton's 1965 book in which he talks about the civil rights movement. He talks about Pacem in Terris, the encyclical that the Pope had written at that time about world peace, and sort of a nuclear nonproliferation. And I started to really see the ways in which this work that is going on 52 years old this year has so much relevance to our life and times today, just the way in which politics can feel very divided, conversations can feel really difficult to have. And at the time, Merton was sort of calling for an increased dialogue and the receptiveness to hear other people's voices, even when they have uncomfortable things for us to hear, and to hear what God is saying through those of us around us. And that sort of just struck me as something that was very relevant. And from there, I couldn't put it down. I wanted to do what I could to bring it back to relevance.
Andrew, one thing that I always found interesting about Merton, and it fits in with what you're saying, is that in addition to his own message that you need to listen to other people, it seems like over the course of his own life, he actually was able to change his own perspective by listening. So, for example, in Seven Story Mountain, he says later in his life that while he recognizes that people feel a strong connection with Seven Story Mountain, he himself feels he was far too condemnatory and narrow-minded towards people of other faiths and backgrounds in that book, and he actually changed his perspective.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a quality to which, just a little biographical note, wherein Merton's parents, I think, were a stumbling block for him, as they are for a lot of people. His mother died when he was six of cancer, and her decision not to let him visit her in the hospital, I think, always sort of tainted his vision of her as he grew older, and shaped a lot of his relationships with women. And his father, who was sort of a bon vivant, like a painter and a socialite of sorts, carried on like an extramarital affair in the years afterwards that I think also sort of tainted his view of certain... It sort of came to shape his view of Protestants at that time in his life. And I think over time, his retreat from the world, initially into monasticism, was sort of the embrace of Catholicism, served for him a way to get away from these things he didn't like about the secular world, which he made out to be about Protestantism.
Right, and then that retreat from the world then gets reversed in a sense as he engages with the world after a certain amount of time at Gethsemane.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, and I found that interesting about him that he kind of chooses to step away from the world and then through that finds a certain freedom and ability to and desire for greater interaction with the world, for greater activism through his religious life that maybe he wasn't even expecting when he started out on his spiritual journey.
I know that over time he sort of came to view his motives a little skeptically, where the notes from a guilty bystander, as we talked about before, it's kind of funny because to him, to close oneself off sort of became a kind of original sin or the desire to do so. And it's also funny, just like as a fellow writer, to look at his motivations in which, when he entered the Abbey, he burned all of his writings and he quit his thesis, and he sort of had pledged not to write again. And then, of course, today we know him for the writings that he did during his monastic life. And it is sort of funny to think of a monk, when we think of vows of silence, or we think about a more quiet contemplative life, we don't necessarily think about reaching back out in that way. So Merton, as someone who sort of straddles that divide between contemplation and action, I think is a really interesting individual.
It seems like there are a series of sort of spiritual reversals and jujitsu that we're talking about here in describing Merton's growth and his biography. You mentioned in your article his concept of submitting without submitting. It almost sounds like we're into some deep spiritual martial art here. How can we use that today in dealing with some of the issues that were pertinent in his time? Non-proliferation issues, the environment, and that our current Pope Pope Francis frequently speaks of.
Well, one of the things that jumps out to me is a story from The Wisdom of the Desert, which is his collection of sort of stories of the early desert fathers. And he has a bit in there wherein a one of the monks is robbed, and he returns to the thieves with a small bag and basically says, "Hey, you forgot this." And this gesture causes the thieves to begin weeping and say, "Truly, he is a man of God." And there is this quality where I can't help but flash back to your earlier discussion about high school debate and the way in which it's become more and more about winning, wherein our times, and I think in all times, the lesson is sort of that when we're so focused on getting our points in and getting points on the board, we end up not really actively listening to one another. And in that respect, we don't convey the things that we're here to convey, or rather that we don't express ourselves as we should.
Yeah, I think during his time, it was sort of that whole... it's very Mertonish idea of not arguing for peace or demonstrating for peace, but just being peace. And I guess that goes back to just being a model of Christian mercy and peace.
Absolutely.
Well, he is Thomas Merton. He is that model of peace in a lot of ways, and that model of dialogue, which we really appreciate. And one of the things that is a kind of famous moment in Thomas Merton's life, and that you write about, Andrew, in your article, is this moment in 1966 where he has this kind of mystical experience in Louisville, Kentucky, at this shopping district at the street corner. And I'll just read what Merton has famously written, that he says that he was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream of separateness, of spurious self-isolation in a world of renunciation and supposed holiness. And I think it remains a very apt passage to read and remember today, because so much of our political debate seems to be trapped by this sense of otherness, whether we're talking about someone from a different political party or someone from a different country that's trying to come to the United States or whatnot, this sense that we are separate and that we must maintain that separation, which is the opposite of what Merton is talking about here. In a sense, he's saying, like, we all have to really see each other and love each other. And it's just a really moving image, I think, for today's world. Do you have a sense of how this impacted Merton in a practical way during his life at that moment, and then how we might also allow it to impact us?
Well, I think that in many respects, it reshaped Merton's view of his own vocation and what it meant really to be a monk, and what the purpose of separating oneself from the world really was. So on the one hand, when he entered into the monastic living as a young man who was in a great deal of pain, he'd lost all of his living family, and he really only had the church and God. He basically tried to lose himself in that, and in the failing to lose himself and instead finding a church, finding a community within the abbey, it sort of grew from there into finding humanity again. And I think that this really comes back to a point that he makes, wherein love is the form that love is courage, or that courage is the form love takes, such that it's easy when we're afraid, when we're in pain, to retreat away from each other. And in fact, that seems to be the way that most of us would rather go when we're scared, when we don't really know what's going on. But the knowledge of a universal connection in which we are all children of God, as we learn in the Our Father, that becomes the connecting thread that can guide us back toward each other and to allow us to do the things that we have to do in life.
That's interesting. Andrew, I wanted to ask you what you thought. You know, Thomas Merton's life was sort of tragically cut short. Mm. He was electrocuted while he was at a conference on interreligious dialogue. Do you have a sense of where Merton would have moved in terms of those fields, interreligious dialogue, working with other contemplative faiths and other contemplative groups, had he lived beyond 1968?
Well, It's difficult to say, if only because we can only speculate, but I do find it very interesting that during that same trip, he met with a particular Dzogchen master and described him as being one of the wisest men he'd ever met in his life. So I think he probably would have gone further in that direction. It's also interesting to me that I believe his last speech on the same day that he died was on Marxism. So I think that his particular direction would have continued definitely towards social justice and toward a certain universal qualities of mankind that are need to work together.
Is he sort of the man we need today when we talk about how divisive our, people can't even speak to each other respectfully or however, whatever we're doing on Facebook or Twitter, I don't know if that's really speaking to each other. It's sort of like firing epigrams and emblems and memes and what have you. How can he help us negotiate that very sometimes fractious reality we inhabit now?
Well, I mean, I think it's also, on Twitter, when you only have 140 characters, it's hard to put in nuance. There's that quality, I think, where, I don't know if everyone else saw this, but shortly after the election, I saw a lot of posts of, if you voted for so-and-so, you're not my friend anymore, and let me know so I can unfriend you. Mm-hmm. And I think that quality in which we're able to pick and choose more than ever what we engage with online, what websites we go to, what news sources we listen to, the whole, this is fake news and so I don't believe it. I won't listen to it. I don't need to pay attention to it. And that also comes down to other people's opinions, wherein I'm no longer friends with X because of how they voted. And I think that what Merton would end up saying is that even when we disagree with people, that is the time that we most need to listen to them, because every person is speaking in some level from their truth and from the place that God has put them here to talk to us. And so it is only through hearing what other people have to say that we can find the bit of humanity and therefore the bit of God that we lack that is in those other people, and to be able to gain a fuller picture of all of this. And I think that really comes back to what it means to live in a democracy as well. Merton makes the point that democracy runs off of its own kind of faith, and if democracy ceases to exist for enough people, it ceases to exist entirely.
Right. Yeah, I find it fascinating how many things Merton wrote about and said that remain like the same level of relevance today, if not more so even. Writing in 1966, you write in your article at americamagazine.org that Merton had a fear that a, quote, loss of respect for being in man and the essential divinity of both would lead to this cheapening of human life, the destruction of environment, and it was this kind of sin of modernity that confuses mechanical progress for human betterment, pursuing personal comfort and societal approval over living the teachings of Christ. And this is something that, remains a concern today, that remains concern in terms of how we treat the vulnerable in our society, how we treat our environment, and are perhaps even more pressing today than they might have been then in a lot of ways. How do we sort of avoid being discouraged by the sort of continuation of so many of these issues that seemingly we would have made more progress on by now?
Well, so something that Merton came back to quite a few times in his writing, and it was something that I struggled with as a reader, and it was one of those things where I actually had come across it before in Kierkegaard, where in his Sickness Unto Death, my biggest complaint with it has always been that he describes the sickness of ennui of life and of the problems that we face in it so well, and then his solution ends up being that Christ died on the cross for us. And I remember being younger and reading that and having a lot of difficulty with that as an ending, I think in part because Kierkegaard just sort of hits it and ends the book. Whereas Merton, due to his vocation, both as a monk and a writer, spends a great deal of time really unpacking that and trying to get to the bottom of what he means by that. And just sort of in the way in which we can conceive of God entering into the human family and in that ultimate sacrifice which is made for us, it presents us with the possibility always of taking our role in a larger plan or doing the things that we have been put here to do. I believe one of Merton's most famous lines is, to be a saint is to be myself. And I think that that really comes back in all of our lives to the question of, what can I do today? What choices am I being faced with? And really, how can I make my best motion today and in all days?
Right, right. Yeah, it's a worthy question for everyone as we kind of wake up or close the day out for ourselves.
You know, Andrew, you also mentioned in the article, you quote Merton, who's saying, in times of drastic change, it is easy to lose touch with where one is. We can be thrown off balance and forget whether today is an ending or a beginning. And, you know, you talk in the piece at AmericanMagazine.org about Merton using images from Revelation, the ending of all things, and seeing the world as coming to an end, which I think every generation probably does. But in a sense, his writings actually suggest there's also a beginning happening, that a time of change is a beginning as well as an end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that every generation views that the end of the world is happening. I mean, we've been asking about whether this is the end of time, at least since, at least since 1000 AD, if I remember my history correctly. But I think that the key thing that we come back to is the question of whether it's the right time. And this is the term that I always come back to, this is the kairos. The idea that it is the time in which God has chosen to act. And if we take that same notion from before of what have I been put here to do, what is the saintly version of myself, it's always the right time to continue to do those things. And in the sense that if this is the ending, we have the choice whether it can be the bitter end of division or if it can be the end of unification and the end that is the wiping away of pain and suffering. And if we believe ultimately in the truth of universal salvation through Christ, then it has to be the second one. It sort of becomes this point in which optimism is inevitable if man can always be liberated and fulfill the vocation that he's been put here to do. And to me, that was a really inspiring point that just echoes through all of Merton's work.
Right. One of the quotes that you mentioned is that Merton writes that basically every moment in our life is a chance to, he says, respond now in perfect freedom to the redemptive love of God for man in Christ, that you can rise above the forces of necessity and evil in order to say yes to the mysterious action of spirit that is transforming the world, even in the midst of violence and confusion and destruction, which, as you mentioned, everyone sort of feels like whatever time they're living in has plenty of.
Absolutely. I mean, as I mentioned at the beginning of the article, I think we're facing a time where a lot more people than usual feel that way, but it is in some respect the human condition.
Right, right. Yeah, and so it's helpful to have, I think, this kind of cloud of witnesses from the church, from holy men and women who have grappled with these questions before. It's not just us grappling with these questions, and there'll be plenty of people coming after us to grapple with them as well. And there's some comfort in that. And you got to hope that at least we do a little something to make it better for the people that come after us. And we do a little
there's
something
a lot of pressure there.
To learn from the people who come before us. Yeah, you especially, Kevin.
I know. It's like I'd have to make every moment of my life being attentive and thoughtful. It's stressful to even contemplate.
But look, you're thinking right now.
It's working. I'm willing to give it a try. Next time I'm on Twitter, I will definitely give it a try, or on Facebook.
Yeah, I don't think people being more thoughtful on Twitter is a problem yet. So we could keep moving toward...
There is a vast conversion territory there, yeah.
Andrew,
yeah.
What do you think Kierkegaard would have made of Twitter?
Oh, geez. I don't know if he would have
one minute.
Count. I think he probably would have kept as far away from it as possible and done everything he could not to check it.
Even with 280 characters?
That would be more tempting. 280 characters for sure, especially with all the coffee he was drinking.
I think there's at least one sort of Kierkegaard-related parody account out there, no?
Oh, yeah, I'm
do you,
sure.
Are,
oh,
do you
I'm
follow sure. them all, Jim? No, but
there's definitely one that mashes together Kierkegaard and Kim Kardashian.
That's what it is, right?
It's, that wow. sounds amazing. So, I look for that.
So ending on a very positive note, like Kierkegaard and Kim Kardashian.
They could be friends.
Well, I think that's what this Twitter account is sort of positing here. We thank you so much, Andrew, for your time today, for your insights on Thomas Merton and our world today. We really appreciate you taking the time with us.
I really appreciate being here. Thanks so much.
No problem. So if you want to take a look at Andrew Lenore's article, you can go to americamagazine.org called What Would Thomas Merton Make of Trump, Climate Change, and Twitter? And you can subscribe to America Magazine by calling 1-800-627-9533. You can check us out on social media, Facebook, Twitter, all of those things. We will try to make your day more positive with our social media feeds, encourage you along the way. Thanks for listening to us today. For Jim Keane and Kevin Clark and myself, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.